This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and we're back again, getting closer and closer to the end of this year with nothing less than the exciting trends of 2024.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that's how you do it, right? You have to wait until the end of the year. Anyway, continuation from our previous episodes on the McKinsey report on trends. And again, we're not really going to the thing itself. It's just, again, inspiration for us to talk about the topics that apparently the world thinks are important. A lot we talked about applied AI. So what's next? Predict what's next.
I'm going to predict that it's... Is it ice cream manufacturing machines?
Could be. I mean, you're talking about a lot of AI, and that is going to melt away like snow for the sun, like ice cream under the sun. So why not? And to be honest, ice cream machines, especially at McDonald's, I've been told, because I never go there, are a big problem to keep working. So maybe with all this new AI stuff, they will finally keep the McFlurry machines up and running.
Well, actually, so this is probably possibly old news at this time, but I think the recent rights repair legislation has actually just meant that the whole kind of you can't repair our machines because they contain firmware, et cetera, has finally been overturned. And indeed, people can use whatever company they want to repair their McFlurry machines. So, yes, maybe in the future,
in my mind.
You will be able to get a McFlurry whenever you want, should you want.
Although I doubt that that's going to be part of this report.
Probably not. No. We are indeed. This next topic, industrializing machine learning. Yes, it's more AI. Yes, it's more ML. This is, you know, we seem to be going kind of from the most advanced and scary and unknown, the generative AI side of things. We're now back into the fairly kind of traditional AI and ML, and in this case we're talking about it being fairly I was going to use the word rigorous, but like I guess industrialized, it's right there in the title, but sort of it being deployed fairly routinely into everyday workflows, everyday analysis, and being generally speaking things I guess that people don't really think about too much anymore
or are interested in. Because if you look at a little graph there, and yes, people who are not on YouTube, we are looking at a graph from the report here. I can see that the interest went up hugely from 0.1-ish to 0.1-ish and a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Innovation went up a little bit there, but yeah, obviously this is not a very hot topic apparently. Also, job postings went down, so... This, as a title, does, I think, make suspect it's just the boring drudgery behind what makes a machine learning work, to be honest. It's not far from it that it's not important, because without it, it would definitely never get to the scale it's being used today. But it's not really something that is very alive, apparently.
Yeah, I think this is the case where we're looking at something that's fairly well solved. AI ops has been around for a while now. We were certainly talking about it a good maybe couple of years ago now.
Longer than that even.
Yeah.
I can remember AI ops being coming up when we were at Hortonworks.
Yeah. So this is just something I think that's just like well solved at this point. And not too much else to say about it on my side.
No, let's see if the next one sparks more innovation on our end or more interest. It's next generation software development, which has had a interest growth of zero, innovation growth of a little bit more than zero, but not really noticeable. Which surprises me, actually. Because Gen AI has been a huge thing on the new next generation software development, all the co-pilots, or otherwise said, automated cut and paste. I would have expected this to have a lot more interest. So I think this might have to do with the fact that this research source data comes from early in the year. Yeah. Although Copilots were around already last year as well, and actually were more hot than they are now. Today, I can see a lot of organizations pulling back from the use of Copilots because it has been a rise of concerns around copyright protections and source tracing and things like that. But apparently, in the whole hype bubble, this one doesn't hype along with the rest of it.
Yeah, I think this is just one of those cases of the hype hadn't accelerated by sort of that point in 2023. I think 2024, we saw quite a lot of that growth. But yeah, I think this is just one of those cases where the data, you know, for the following year will look quite a bit different.
Yeah, I would expect. Apart from that, neither you or I are super developers. So moving on.
I think so.
Ah, this is one that Dave will like. Dave likes a bit of cybersecurity, doesn't he?
I do, for my sins, which are many and varied. But in this case, we're seeing, I guess, the only thing I'm kind of a little bit puzzled around here is digital trust and cybersecurity. I mean, I'm surprised that the interest in innovation, even back in 2019, was so low, as scored by McKinsey anyway, because I kind of feel that digital trust and cybersecurity has always been, you know, fairly high interest and fairly high focus. You know, throughout the years, we continue to see more state-sponsored activity. We continue to see exploits becoming, you know, more comprehensive, more complex. We certainly continue to see data breaches and things like that growing larger and larger. So I think the only thing that surprised me here is that the graph is so kind of, yeah, so close to origin and zero. It's kind of definitely more impactful than any of the other things that we've talked about this episode. But yeah, it's just surprised that this isn't a little bit more accelerated.
Yeah, but I think that's how the graphs are made, because interest goes from 0 to 1, 0 to 100%, but doesn't say is that number of people, number of reports, number of papers. I think they just compare the interest of this topic with the interest in the other topics. And if you compare how many people are interested today in GenAI versus being people are interested in security, it's going to be a lot less, because trust and cybersecurity is not sexy anymore. Again, you're right, very important, and probably every company should be busy with it. But it's not something that's on the tabloid front pages, if I can call it that, if I can say it like that, if you compare it to the other things we've been talking about earlier. I do see that the interest has gone up. So if you consider this like a niche market or a niche topic amongst the rest, then actually it's a big jump. So that's a good thing, and not unsurprising considering all of the data leaks, and it is getting in the news more, so that's a good thing. Well, it's a bad thing, because if it didn't happen, it would be in the news, but you know what I mean. But the innovation, I would expect the innovation to outpace the interest at the moment, because again, of all of the GenAI things that are pouring into security as well. And whether it's a good innovation or bad innovation, I'm not going to say. But innovation is fairly flat.
Yeah, just hasn't really shifted that much. But again, this data was, you know, wound up last year. So thinking back about how the industry has shifted over this past 12 months, maybe we'd see a bit more hockey sticking of it.
Personally, not really. I mean, it's part of the ecosystem I work in, and the biggest changes are towards longer data retention, in my experience. And yes, there's a lot of snake oil being sold on how GenAI is going to make everything better. I don't call it innovation. But if you just look at what people are actually deploying and using, then it's more about cost reduction versus more bigger data volumes, because more data costs more money. So reducing money so you can put more data in kind of keeps the expense in check. And it's not just more data because more history, but also more broader data. Because the days where your security was only your audit logs, well, not even, but only your authorization authentication logs and nothing more than that, that's happily no longer the case. People have seen that more data sources can help you get a better view of what's happening here. And that, of course, again, has a price ticket, and systems that offer better long-term retention does do seem to be working well. But is it innovation? Is it just a follow-on on the old big data things? I guess.
Yeah, nothing else for me on this one.
No, you don't want to note the little thing that blockchain is seen as very important by McKinsey when it comes to digital trust and cybersecurity, and that the availability of candidates outstrips the need by 4, I think, if I remember correctly.
Indeed. No, I don't need to bring it up because you just did.
Yeah, and the moral of the story here, people, is hype doesn't pay in the long term. So if you're hyping very hard on GenAI today, learn the lesson from blockchain. Now, I do think GenAI is more useful than blockchain, which is not hard to do, low barrier there. But that's going to go the same way. It does, however, here the job postings difference minus 34% between 2019 and 2023. That's a big drop, and that's across the board, not just a blockchain thing, obviously. For me, if I'm looking around to see where my next challenge would be, I kind of also include security as a growth market still. So that kind of surprises me. And the 24% is, by the way, only 22-23. I have to correct myself there. That's just of that 1 year. That's a big drop.
Yeah, but there was a big drop in in jobs generally between that time because of the macroeconomic climate shift. Like, we saw this in the previous one around the developer side of things as well. Like, there was a quite significant drop, but I think they're predicting the overall trend will change. But like, there were just a lot of redundancies in both the developers area and the InfoSec area through slowdowns. But if you look at things like I'm just clicking through here, available talent versus demand, like all of the areas are actually like drastically underserved, apart from, as Jon mentioned, it's actually close to 5x too many folks interested in blockchain, but all of the other areas drastically underrepresented, actually the two smallest ones being risk analysis and identity theft talent, which is at 0.1x of demand. So if you were looking for something to get into now, you know, I don't imagine that would have changed that much. That'd be a good place to get into.
So pretty much blockchain is responsible for the whole drop in job postings.
Yeah,
I consider that a good thing.
Fair enough. Let's move it on to something that I think has changed quite a bit in the last few years, from 2019 to 2023, and that's advanced connectivity. And it's not just stuff on planet Earth with 4G, 5G, and now 6G, Wi-Fi 6 and Wi-Fi 7, it's satellites in space becoming a common thing usable by pretty much all.
Low Earth orbit is not considered space, but okay.
I'm going to call it space. I mean, I can't breathe up there. That's pretty much space as far as I'm concerned. Like, this is... We many times have had comments around Mr. Musk. Not a fan, generally speaking, of him and the crazy things that he does. But credit where it's due, the Starlink technology is like very, very cool. We've had had a guest on here who joined via Starlink. Lives out in a very rural location, and you know, just working in that location wouldn't have been possible pre Starlink, and it has very much revolutionized the idea of kind of rural networking, rural bandwidth, rural availability, and is genuinely something I think has kind of made a big shift in things that I think was first rolled out in 2021, and I think first public paying customers were 2022. So by 2023 here, it was kind of starting to gain pretty much full steam. So yeah, I think that to me is certainly where I would see both interest and innovation having moved fairly significantly. You know, Wi-Fi 6 and 7 and, you know, 5G and 6G, I'm really not that interested in. It's just more of the same. But I think Starlink, I think, really has changed the advanced connectivity space fairly significantly.
Well, 5 and 6G do have an impact on the same thing, actually, because here locally, by coincidence, there's kind of duopoly. You can either have fiber from one party, or you can have copper cable from another company. And you kind of, depending on where you live, you had to choose. Now fiber is being deployed more broadly, so the competition does get fiercer. But just this year, a couple of months ago actually, a first provider came up with providing home internet over 5 or 6G. Now 6G isn't there yet, so it's 5G at the moment. But that will also have an impact. And actually, I had a question for you. We've seen that we're moving towards fiber, but that's a different kind of problem solving. We're not solving the rural areas, we're solving speed, which we maybe not even need if we're very honest, but I've got a gigabit line anyway, so whatever. But the Starlink is definitely solving a different problem. It's not solving a speed problem, it's solving an accessibility problem. So do you think that satellite internet will win in the end, and we'll all have totally decoupled satellite internet at some time in the future? Will there always be an interplay between the different things? I mean, copper cable will at some point disappear because basically the cables are rotting away. Copper isn't, doesn't live indefinitely. So that will be removed. Fiber optics typically should have an indefinite life because light photons do not create stress on a cable, so typically they should stay around forever. 5G, 6G satellite, obviously dependent on antennas, locations that can be maintained indefinitely. So would you think that because I don't see 5G, 6G as satellite, because it's terrestrial. I mean, you can do it over satellite too, but typically this is used on terrestrial towers that are just antennas that you can use, right? So where do you think we'll end up in the end?
I do think we will still end up with an interplay between different services. I think satellite will continue to get cheaper, faster, lower latency, all those kind of things. But it is still like you're still relying on like metal spinning overhead in quote unquote space. I'm still going to call it space.
Well, we did launch the first wooden satellite, so it doesn't have to be metal.
True, very true. It will have metal components in it. There won't be circuits made out of wood. But it's still going to be a lot more. I can't put it this way. I can't see it getting to a price point that, you know, things like fiber will get to. And it doesn't have the, you know, roaming slash mobile slash while on the go type, you know, sort of functionality. Like you won't get, I don't think you'll get to the point where where satellite would overtake 5G, 6G on mobile handsets, for example.
Well, at least you'd have a bigger screen, because if you have to bolt a satellite dish at the other side of your phone, the phone can be bigger again. So that would be a good evolution.
Yeah. So I think we will still have this interplay with different types of technology. But I think absolutely satellite will just utterly rule the kind of the rural areas and kind of areas that have traditionally suffered with a connectivity. You know, I'm particularly focused on this because I live in a very rural location. I have no neighbors and live in the middle of the countryside, and getting fiber to the premises here was a very, very expensive endeavor. I definitely don't regret it, because for the last 6+ years, I've been able to very effectively work remotely with this setup. But you know, had I made the move, you know, only a year ago, satellite would have been an incredibly attractive option. And okay, it's not perfect for you know, high definition video calls. Audio can be a little bit glitchy, a little bit latency inducing every now and again, but really it's more than good enough for a lot of folks, and especially if you're going from, you know, not having any connectivity options that aren't extortionately expensive to just paying a pretty low initial outlay and a certainly not too I don't think too extortionate monthly fee. Like it's one of the things I think has genuinely shifted the market.
Yeah, I wouldn't actually say that the pricing is the main differentiator here, but the speed of access. Because after you paid the extortionate amount of money, it still took 2 years, I think, before the thing was actually up and running.
Yeah.
With satellite, well, you go to the website, you order it, and it's delivered next day, and you're up and running, right? So that's also a big difference with our even getting more and more mobile populations these days. I mean, now that you have the cable there, I'm sure you're never leaving there again, because you never but now that you have satellite, that becomes something. Because me, myself, I'm also, I'm looking around, maybe I should move a house. And at the moment, I do always check the listings. Does it have fiber already in the house? Because if it doesn't, but with satellite again, that at some point might get better. And there's competition happening now, because I think Amazon is now also shooting satellites up in the air. It's going to get crowded up there, but they want to kind of have their own Starlink kind of thing. Mm. And I think, I thought it was a third party that the name now escapes me, but that's also going to drive the price down. Competition usually does that. And weirdly enough, fiber optics have a lot less competition. And I'm seeing fiber optics prices go up. So I would not be surprised that at some point, not for the same quality, because as you said, satellite does have some drawbacks, but pricing will be very competitive between the two if it's already there today.
Yeah. I think it's very, this is a space that I think will continue to be very, very interesting, as you say, like with competition starting to come in now. I think this is a space that we will see a lot of change in over the next couple of years, which will be exciting.
You didn't talk much about Wi-Fi, because Wi-Fi, to be honest,
I mean, Wi-Fi and, you know, 5G, 6G, the reason that those I don't find particularly interesting is that what seems to be happening is as you see a new type of, whether it's, you know, cell communication or, mobile communication or Wi-Fi standard, they seem to be focusing more and more on shorter range, but higher bandwidth, lower latency. And that's just not very interesting to me. Like, I personally, I have more than enough bandwidth that, and the latency is absolutely fine for me with existing, even going back to, you know, Wi-Fi, probably 5 is, you know, what I've probably most got deployed around here. And even when, you know, if I think about when like traveling on a train or something like that, the number of times where the I'm using the train's Wi-Fi facility and the, you know, the signal strength drops to really low availability because you're going through the countryside and the cell phone coverage is just not that great. It's, to me, I'm just less interested in these, in the innovations that are coming in the forms of higher performance, lower latencies and shorter range, because that just means you need to pepper the landscape with even more transmitters to be able to get decent coverage. And the industry doesn't seem to be focused on having better coverage across, you know, larger areas. They seem to be focusing far more on, let's just get great coverage in cities and forget about everywhere else, which, maybe this is my influence of, I live in a very rural location. And, you know, when I travel, I enjoy traveling to other rural locations, as it turns out. And it's just one of those things that I really notice a lot.
Yeah, I mostly agree. I mean, in the house, the speed and latency is really important. I'll put a cable because it doesn't matter what Wi-Fi you have, there's always going to be some instability in there. So that's it. And as you said, Wi-Fi 5 does good enough for the rest of it. Now, for the trains, it's actually funny because here in the Netherlands, the train owners, how do you call it, the guys who run the trains, actually are deciding to cut away Wi-Fi in trains because nobody's using it because cell coverage is so good because Netherlands is a very densely populated area and nobody's using the train Wi-Fi anymore because we all have unlimited data or very big data bundles these days, that it just doesn't make sense. But again, UK being way larger and much more fragmented isn't the word, but you have very large concentrations of population and very open areas.
Yeah.
That's not something that we get around here.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, I think with that, unless you've got anything else on this particular topic.
Nope, I'm all topicked out.
Well, in that case, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a patron. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, and even comment, should you wish. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and more information about the podcast. And send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is Still in Space Dave.
And my name is, no you're not, Jon.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.